Getting through the minefield of misinformation, intelligence operations, predictive programming. This is Connecting the Dots with Matt Arendt on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
All right, welcome to this week's episode of Connecting the Dots, where we look at context. That's the whole point of this show, is really to give people a sense, not just of context as far as history context, the currents of the past that are shaping our present age, but the world as a whole. Oftentimes people get a little bit myopic thinking about one part of the world in a compartmentalized way, or another part of the world that they're comfortable with. And they don't see the world as one process, one chemistry in which there's many elements, and each element is affected by the entire chemistry of the whole process. So that process, being shaped by humans, is obviously shaped by the thing that makes us different from beasts, which is ideas. And some ideas and sets of ideas can be in harmony with what people have known for many, many, many centuries and millennia before we were born, more commonly as natural law, aka truth, reasonability, things that are verifiable according to the nature itself. And certain ideas are lies. They're just out of whack with natural law. They're out of whack with truth. They're deceitful. They're wrong by mistake, by error, or by design, whatever the case may be. But when it acted upon, it doesn't go well for humanity or nature. So right now, we are in a crisis. We are living in the wake of a lot of bad ideas built on each other that have done a lot of damage to humanity. A lot of the great potentials we had going back to JFK delivering his speeches about the world that could be, of a world with hydroelectric dams built up, harnessing the power of rivers for flood control, for agriculture, for energy use, for industry, for farms. That type of process that was very optimistic and not just American, when we were actually building things based on the future and the future potential, but also for Africa, where there were discussions with Kwame Nkrumah and many leaders of African nations with John F. Kennedy around building the Volga River Dam that would help increase the productive powers of labor, the industrial output, such that these countries that had suffered under colonialism could finally be liberated, could finally meet the needs of their people to end hunger and poverty and scarcity, which is at the heart of so many wars and conflicts manipulated by the so-called elite. So this is why I'm really happy today to talk about something very important that touches on a lot of this stuff. And a good friend of mine, Courtney Turner, agreed to come on. She has made herself, whether she knew that she was going to make herself a specialist or not, I don't know, going into it, but she has become, I'm quite persuaded, I've listened to her presentations on her fantastic podcast that everyone should follow, the Courtney Turner podcast, as well as some interesting testimony in the Tennessee state legislature, which just occurred a couple of weeks ago or a week and a half ago, on the issue of not just natural asset companies, but the entire paradigm shift that's being forced down our throats subtly and not so subtly around some very, very, what I would say, bad ideas that will hurt humanity and ironically nature itself as well. So Courtney, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Me, yeah.
Cool. Well, look, I was just so impressed to see your coverage. There's a bit of a lag on my end, just so people watching know. If I shut down, we had a big bad windstorm recently, and the internet's been a little bit haywire. So Courtney may just end up on this show doing the hosting all on her own. So don't be surprised if that happens. But there's a bit of a lag. So Courtney, I got a question for you. I was very impressed with your presentation that you were asked to deliver to the state senators in Tennessee regarding natural asset companies and the broader, I guess, again, the only word I have is this eco-fascist financialization of nature paradigm shift. Yeah. Could you go through the essentials that people need to know about what you said, what you told the senators, and what citizens need to understand? Because this affects people in Australia, Europe, Canada, as well as America.
Yeah, absolutely. So, no, I did not know that I was going to be a specialist, and I still do not consider myself a specialist. However, I felt just very like called to sound the alarm. And I had heard about it, and I started a radio show, I think I just did last night, and I was exhausted, so I don't know how well it came out, but I just started a radio show, and it was the 22nd episode already, but I had planned a show that I have been doing some pretty extensive research on. And then I found out about these natural asset companies and found out they were basically kind of like, the conspiracy, literal conspiracy on Jekyll Island, where the Federal Reserve decided to give us our income tax as a Christmas present. That's what they wanted to do with this proposed rule that the New York Stock Exchange was partnering up with the Intrinsic Exchange Group to list this new asset of companies on the New York Stock Exchange. They wanted to pass it through during the holidays and was hoping, I think, at least this is how it appeared, that they could quietly pass it through and nobody would really notice. And so I realized time was of the essence, and I said, okay, I don't know much about this, but I'm going to do a deep dive and do whatever I can to sound alarm. If I'm doing a radio show, then hopefully somebody will hear it and somebody will care. So I started to research as much as I possibly can, and what I basically found out was that it seems that the alarm was sounded by Marlo Oakes, who is the state treasurer for Utah. And now, after watching the video you sent me about, back in the 1870s, it makes sense why it was the Western states that were, all. I thought it was just because they have a lot more, rural land over there. But now I see that this is, of course, as usual, by design. So he sounded the alarm, and he got 22 other state treasurers together. And they all petitioned to what happened was the Intrinsic Exchange Group, who is backed by the usual suspects, the Rockefeller Foundation, Abadir Labs, sorry, Abadir Ventures, which is an interesting company because they're a technology venture company that typically specializes in healthcare technologies. And I don't think that's a coincidence. You would think, why are they involved in something like natural asset companies? But I can give you my thoughts on that. I can only speculate, but I do think it's not unrelated. Then it was IBD, and then IBD Labs, and then Entertaining Ideas, who I can't find anything on there, but the name itself seems pretty interesting. It sounds like a propaganda outfit. I don't know. I can't prove that, but I can't find anything on them. But those were the funding entities behind this Intrinsic Exchange Group, and some of their sub partners were people like Nestle, who was involved in the bottled water scam, and also the wildlife
World,
organization.
yeah, the World
World Wildlife
Wildlife
Fund.
Fund.
Yes, exactly. Which, of course, the brainchild of Julian Huxley, one of the forerunners of UNESCO, who coined the term transhumanism in 1957. Although Max Moore seems to be claiming that title as the originator of that word. But we know, Julian Huxley, and of course, he was a eugenicist. And yeah, so those are some of the sub partner. And it's interesting when you watch this Intrinsic Exchange Group seems to have been created solely for this purpose. And when you watch some of the videos with the CEO, Douglas Eggers, he talks about how this was so difficult to get it off the ground because it requires so much money. And most investors just don't understand the scope of projects like this. But they're very fortunate because the Rockefellers understand this type of philanthropy. And they know that you just have to keep pouring more and more money in, but that, you will see the value. And of course, for them, what the value is that they think that there's going to be $5 quadrillion on the table for them. This is why when I had done this video for my show, and some friends of mine were at a political event in East Tennessee, and one of the senators was there, and he had brought up NACs. So some people call it NAC, some people call it NACs. It's called natural asset companies. So this was this new category of companies that was going to be put up on the New York Stock Exchange. And he asked if anybody knew about it, and only three people raised their hands. Two of them were my friends, and they said, oh, our friend just did a show on this, and it sounds really scary. He said he wasn't all that familiar with it, but he would like to talk to me. He called me and he asked if I would come and present for the Senate. So in the meantime, we were very fortunate because there was a lot of pushback. So in addition to Marlo Oakes, who's the state treasurer of Utah, there were also 25 state attorney generals who put together a comment. So what was happening was that it was unprecedented, where typically when the SEC proposed a rule, you have anywhere from 35, in some cases 90 days for people to submit comments, and then they go through a rebuttal process. In this case, they were doing only 21 days, so it was unprecedented for it to be that short a time period, which I can only conjecture is because they were really hoping they would just quietly sneak it through. And so that was the rebuttal, was that, we need a longer time frame. And the pushback did warrant it ended up in them extending the time period for the comments. So then it was 25 state attorney generals, and they submitted their comments, and it was mostly around a legal case. So they were kind of presenting the argument that this was unlawful. It was an illegal move on the behalf of the SEC and the New York Stock Exchange. The New York Stock Exchange was double dipping here because they were partnered with the Intrinsic Exchange Group, as well as, of course, petitioning to the SEC to propose this rule to list these companies up on the New York Stock Exchange so that they would, benefit on both sides. Conflict of interest, in my opinion. But they did propose this, the legal argument against it. And so when I did the show, what really I ended up going on, I think, 15 shows saying, I just want people to submit comments because I didn't think that we would stop it. I thought that, well, okay, if we submit enough comments, everybody who submits comments will have legal standing. So we would have a much bigger class action suit. And that would be the next, step if they did push it through. So what would this mean? All this, kind of a backstory of what was happening. What would it mean? It means that there would be a new category of companies up on the New York Stock Exchange. Sorry, to back up a minute. They did end up withdrawing the proposal. Lots of people submitted, and I guess they felt like they, couldn't just ram this through. What I said to the when I spoke to the subcommittee, I tailored it to the agricultural implications because I was speaking to the agricultural subcommittee. Obviously, this has implications way beyond just agriculture, but that's who I was speaking to. And in that time, it was delayed for weather, and they also did end up withdrawing the proposal. But I said that I still wanted to come speak because I think they are just going to rebrand, retool. This agenda has been in the works for such a long time. This is not new. It was just a new approach, a new way, and a new way of commodifying. I used to make the joke that they were going to commodify the air, and here they are. That's literally what they're doing. So they thought they would make upwards of $5 quadrillion on, this listing of these new companies. And the way that they had planned to do that was through what they call carbon pricing, carbon credits, carbon offsets. It's really just taxing or doing an offset. The example would be like Al Gore, who, he makes all of this he makes all this noise about how the climate is in jeopardy, and we're using too much carbon dioxide. And meanwhile, of course, he's flying his jets everywhere, and his home is one of the most, the highest use of carbon dioxide. But he says not to worry about it because he has purchased so many carbon offsets that he's actually really doing good for the planet. So this is the scam that they're running. It reminds me a lot of the derivatives that led us to the 2008 crash of the stock market.
I'll just say quick to interject. It reminds me a little bit of the indulgences of the medieval church period, right? Where to get it, you get to buy these get out of hell free cards. If you just had enough money, you could do your orgies, you could kill your servant, whatever, but you got the money to buy the little indulgence. So you're not going to pay any consequences for it. You could tell the raging mob of pitchfork wielding, torch bearing, angry serfs that, no, hey, look, don't worry. I paid for my indulgence. It's good. I'm not sinful anymore. So it's sort of a revamp. I just wanted to.
Yes, that's exactly it. Exactly. They're good people because they have used their, tremendous wealth to offset any, potential harm they may have done. So that's essentially how they thought they were going to make money on this. And of course, I looked at it thinking, oh my gosh, they're going to, completely decimate the economy, not only the earth, but by implementing this. So because it reminded me so much of the derivatives, so which are essentially hedging bets on bets. it's a complete nonsense. And how this kind of rolled out is this has been, as I said, in the works for such a long time. But in the what's going on, I want to point out what's going on with the farmers in Europe right now. They already have natural asset companies there. They don't call it natural asset companies, but back in 2012, the UN had proposed what I call a voodoo economic system, but they call it the SEEA ecosystem accounting. It was their white paper document, and it stands for Systems of Environmental Economic Account sorry, Environmental Economic sorry ec Systems of Economic Environmental Accounting Ecosystem Accounting. Sorry, it's a mouthful. And so they had proposed this white paper back in 2012, and it was a way of valuing nature. So of course there, we don't have any heuristics for valuing nature, so they had to pretty much make this up. And they don't work with the typical generally accepted accounting principles, which I have a really funny side note about that. So when I looked up the, when you look at a document and then you hover over it and you look up, you click on look up and then like a Wikipedia page will show up. So I wanted to know what were traditional generally accepted accounting principles, and what comes up is this gap demon. And I was like, well, I mean, this could totally be a coincidence, but here's the thing. This is what a gap demon is. The gap demon is a medical demon that comes to women to help them find a partner, but it renders them infertile. And if you think about that, that's kind of what they were doing to land. They were making it so that it was very attractive to a financial partner, but it you couldn't produce on it. So very, this is part of a degrowth kind of communist agenda where typically when you value something, it's because it's producing. There's a product that is yielded and that has value, or there is a, it's essentially a product, whether it's labor or it's a, a finished product or intellectual property, but there's a product. In this case, they are valuing the what they call low yield or no yield. So essentially non-production. And this was just terrifying because it means that there could be no, essentially no production on that land. And you don't even have to.
I want to scratch on that a lot more. I think that that's one of the most potent concepts that people have to hold in mind, that it's sort of like an evil doppelganger of what an economy should be and what we have historically done economically regarding having I mean, the idea of an economy, the idea of banking, the idea of having money and not just carrying around a bunch of chickens on our back to trade physical chickens for like physical wheat. That's an innovation that we created along the way of the human experience. But part of what made it work was that you were valuing things that were increasing productivity and not putting values on activities that decreased, aka reduced, the means of supporting human life. So I want to pull on this after we come back from a short commercial break, because you've zeroed in on that so perfectly. So we're gonna listen to a few commercials and we're gonna come back on today's News Talk TNT.
TNT's Chris Smith.
Some big news coming out of Britain this morning with an MP, an independent MP, taking an entire dossier with whistleblowers to Metropolitan Police in London to show how crooked the British government was in pushing vaccines, despite the fact that they knew only too well from the contracts that they signed with Moderna and Pfizer that they could be deadly down the track. And we now know how problematic they have been. Well above expectations. Well above expectations. That's not me saying it. That is the latest mainstream study that came out of New Zealand last week.
Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. A hoax about carbon dioxide in the climate has caused a global energy and economic disaster. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back to the second segment of the first hour of Connecting the Dots on TNT Radio. I am still joined here with Courtney Turner. We are talking about the scam of the Malthusian takeover and the attempt to try to green global finance as part of the basis of a new economic architecture that would value things that have been very alien and foreign to human normal behavior for like thousands of years, basically. And they want to normalize things that involve making money, doing less than nothing, actually depriving humanity of the ability to support life. Cordy, you have made the point that they are professing on their websites that $5 quadrillion is going to be able to be created somehow out of this shifting of our mindset about what is value. You have Biden passing an executive order saying a couple of years ago even that we need to put nature on the balance sheets.
Yep.
Could you say a little bit more about what this different turn of value is? Like, what? How are they planning on doing this and putting a value on doing nothing or doing less than nothing?
Yes. So as I was saying about the white paper by the UN, at that time, 90 countries had signed on to, you know, the idea of natural asset companies, whether they actually called it that or not. The United States had not at that time. And they kept, every article I looked up kept saying, but, you know, they will. So what happens is they have to figure out how to put heuristics on, you know, valuing nature, which, of course, has not. That's unprecedented. We don't value nature, not as a commodity in that kind of a way. And so this goes way back. They've been, you know, working on this for a long time. So in, I think it was 1973, there was a book called Small is Beautiful. This was by Schumacher. And this started to bring this concept of how we could value nature. And then in 2015, Dieter Helm, who's a huge figure in this whole agenda, and he wrote a book called The Value of, what was it, Valuing Nature. I'll look up the exact title. I don't know why I can never remember. Natural Capital, Valuing the Planet. And that was Dieter Helm in 2015. And then in 2016, there was a book by E.O. Wilson, who was a biologist, and it was called Half Earth. So, and then, of course, in 2012, we get this UN document with this, you know, kind of like the gap demon type of voodoo accounting system. And, you know, of course, that is not something typical here. We don't have that type of a value system on nature. But it seems like they were waiting for the Biden administration. And as you mentioned, they did do this executive order to put nature on the balance sheet. They also adopted the UN's SEEA ecosystem accounting. They call it National Strategy to Develop Statistics for Environmental Economic Decision. This is a US system of natural capital accounting. This is what we really need to push back on. And associated environmental economic statistics. And it was done by the Office of Science and Technology, Policy Office of Management, and Budget Department of Commerce. And this was in January of 2023 that they basically adopted the UN's ecosystem accounting. And this is all part of Biden's 30 by 30 plan, which they renamed to, this is very, again, reminiscent of what happened in the middle 1800s, you know, under the name of conservation. They called it America the Beautiful, because the 30 by 30 agenda did not go over so well, because people, I think, understood, more people are waking up, and people understood that the 30 by 30 agenda is part of this UN agenda to have 30% of the Earth's land and water uninhabited by humans, where humans cannot inhabit or produce on this land. And this is a stepping stone to the E.O. Wilson's agenda, which is the half earth, where half of the earth will be reserved and humans cannot inhabit. And if you look, there's these maps and these maps of where the land that humans will be able to inhabit and produce, and it's like little dots. I mean, it's almost non-existent. They really want to seize up all of the land and control of all the land. And part of what's really concerning about this is that, you know, under the guise of conservation, one of the things I told the Senate was that I know there was a bill being put forth, and now I'm going back on Tuesday to try and get them to stop from passing this bill. I believe it's 1890 right now, although they renumber and rename things constantly, so we'll see. But I believe it was Lamberth who put this forth, and he's calling it agricultural easements. But the thing about the conservation easements is the same thing. The thing about conservation easements is that you could have a land trust, so something you inherited from your great-grandparents, let's just say, and they enrolled in a conservation easement because they were getting some sort of tax incentive or credit, and they thought it was beneficial at that time. However, under this, the NACs, which have been withdrawn, they're not moving forward with the NACs, but, you know, like I said, I think they'll keep going and they'll find a way around it. So we need to be vigilant. Yeah. Stop. Yeah. But they, under that, they have what's called ecosystem management services. So essentially they have controlling rights over the land, and they could decide that you can't drill or farm or breathe, even, because, you know, the air is part of the natural assets, natural resources. So this is really just so incredibly egregious, and people could actually, you know, own land that they don't have access to, that they can't produce on. So this is, yeah, very disconcerting. So that's a...
Yeah. Well, just the way that they talk about services too, right? Like, they're trying to really expand and extend something that specifically human beings do. Like, we're the species that creates innovations. We provide services to each other that you could then financialize by having a store, you know, providing a service by owning a convenience store or whatever. Now they're saying no. That's what photosynthesis is. It's not something we should take for granted. It's providing a service. It's a business. Nature is a business, providing exchange. It's taking in sunlight and some CO2, turning it into oxygen. And it's a service provided to us. So we always value services with money, don't we? And so, of course, like you just said, we should see, when we think of oxygen or CO2 or photosynthesis, we should think of money. Right? That's just the only capitalist thing to do, right? It's like, what?
That's how they're selling it. That's how they're packaging it. One of the cases that I made to them was that, you know, they're doing this all under the guise of conservation. They want to conserve the land and protect the land. But my argument is that I moved to Tennessee a few years ago, and Tennessee has some beautiful, beautiful land. But the most beautiful land I've seen is actually farmland that's privately owned. And you may ask, why would that be? Well, it's my assessment that my observation that people, when they own something, especially if they do have a business on it, but even if it's not, you know, a business that's scaled out to other people, what if it's just to provide for their family? They take pride in it. They take pride in their labor. They take pride in their ownership because it's theirs. And so they're going to cultivate that land. And, you know, it's going to be a byproduct of their unique creative expressions, their talents, their resources, their energy and efforts. And that will all be manifested, and you will see, you know, the results of that. And so, in my opinion, those are some of the most beautiful lands that I've seen. Not the ones, you know, we have some beautiful, like, national parks and forests and whatnot. But I would really argue that it's people who... you know, have dominion over the land, who produce the most beautiful land. I mean, they've taken, throughout history, they've taken unarable land and turned it into this, you know, flourishing, you know, whether it be gardens or farmlands or, but things that are arable. And I think that's just, you know, one of the incredible, you know, ingenuity of human species. And they're trying to rob us of that. And they're also really trying to not only starve us. I think that's part of the agenda. I think it's also they need to terraform. They talk about the UN 100, which is they partnered with the Boston Global Forum. And this is imagining the centennial of the UN, which of course would then be 2045. And they talk about at that time, they would have an AI world society. They have partnered with Boston Global Forum. They wrote a book. It was Michael Dukakis, who was the former governor of Massachusetts, who wrote this book, Remaking the World, The Age of Global Enlightenment. And they are talking about an AI world society where Ukraine will be the hub. And they've done symposiums on how they have to rebuild Ukraine because it's been decimated by the war. We must rebuild and send lots of resources and funding to Ukraine so it can be this centralized hub for this AI world society that will be connected to all of these other C40, 15-minute cities, smart cities all around the world. And I, you know, that requires a lot of power. So they're going to need some land, and they're going to need some resources to terraform so they can create this, what looks like a cyber Satan to me. But that's just my opinion. They seem to be saying they need to, you know, destroy all religions and replace it with one unifying religion. It looks like that's going to be a cyber Satan, but or an AI god.
Yeah, some weird fusion, right, of like some cyber Satan Gaia worshipping remix, right? Like it's some sort of weird fusion, maybe with some UFO blue beam elements added to the mix as well, just to like give it some flavor and some sacredness.
I think
that people always...
I think all of those things are to get them to the cyber Satan, right? Because they need to terrorize people. They need to unify them around a common enemy, which is how we got this agenda in the first place, right? The document of Limits to Growth, which is Club of Rome, 1972. Their 1992 document, the Global Reformation document, they admit that it was essentially propaganda. Now, these aren't their words specifically, but I'm paraphrasing. They essentially say that, you know, nobody was going to buy into this junk science and they needed to find a way for people to rally behind it. So they had to create a common enemy. So, of course, what was the common enemy? They decided the enemy of humanity was man. This is why you are the carbon they want to reduce. But now that everybody feels that man is the enemy, we are the problem. We are decimating the earth. We can all rally together to conserve, that's the word, under the name of sustainability, which, of course, is just a nod to the initiates that understand the 17 sustainable goals, which really have nothing to do with preserving the earth or humanity. It is all about creating this centralized governing body that will enslave humanity.
So. Yeah, it's sustaining feudalism. It's not sustaining nature or people. It's sustaining feudalism. but, you know, you've brought up already in the course of your deep dives, as well as you've alluded to it here, the occurrence of certain institutions. You mentioned the Rockefeller Foundation, but the ones that really popped into my mind that I think we'll begin talking about, we'll pick it up at the after the next break, is the World Wildlife Fund and UNESCO. I know I was just going on somebody just sent me a link to the UNESCO website, and they were pushing now biosphere reserves, which are also very clearly tied to another aspect of the architecture of the monetization of nature. You've brought up the figure of Julian Huxley in your research and the revival of eugenics. That's also tied to transhumanism. We only have about 3 minutes before the next break, so maybe you could start pulling on that a little bit and then we could pick it up in the last little segment.
Sure. Well, I will also add to that, one of the things people really need to be, and this is tied to all of that, is climate smart commodity projects. So back in 2022, the SEC proposed a rule that did go through where all these companies have to comply with ESG. They got some pushback from the farmers, and you would think it's because this is a gross overreach of the SEC and they have no purview implementing such things. However, that's not what the pushback came from. It came from farmers who said they didn't have the infrastructure in order to be able to record their ESG. So no problem. A few months later, the USDA, which is the United States Department of Agriculture, announces they're going to invest $3.1 billion into climate smart commodity projects. And they invested $90 million into companies like ADM, $40 million into the Farm Journal, which I can only surmise is for propaganda purposes. You know, again, that's just a guess, but I don't know why else. And so this is how they will, this is part of the transhuman agenda, right? The track, trace, and surveil, and whatever they can measure and you know, they can then regulate and control. So I think that's a huge part of that agenda, and that definitely needs to be stopped. But yeah, we can get into, this is all part of the eugenics and Malthusian plan that, of course, and it's funny because with UNESCO, which is tied to education, I've been doing a deep dive. One of the things I also went into the state capitol to talk about was against the, you know, issue of school choice. And I know the long history of those roots. And one of the things that came up, I thought it was funny, in it was actually in the video that you sent, that was the Moral Land Act. And that came up in the research that I've been doing, because the Moral Land Act, which was signed by President Lincoln, then gave all these resources to Cornell and Yale. And of course, it does seem like a lot of these, they then got all of these resources for the schools. And this education agenda is part of creating global citizens, which is, you know, what they want to do with the land. I think the land is part of, if they can control the land and they can, you know, stop the production of the land. They can force people into cities, which, as I mentioned, with the goals of the UN 100 is to have all of these smart cities that are all interconnected. So they can force people into cities. They can turn the people who are still on the land basically into forced labor camps, because now they can surveil and track them and make them comply with specific regulations. And if they don't, there will be punishment. There was another bill coming locally. And this is the thing that I really want people to understand is these, I think we have more power locally than anywhere else, but a lot of the local initiatives are coming from a much bigger agenda. You know, the federal apparatus, I think, is just answering to this, more global type of ideology. And so they're pushing these bills through, and another one. And a lot of times these local politicians don't really know that. They don't understand the bigger picture. And so they're pushing another bill that's a foresting bill. And in it, I can see when I read the bill, it's very clear that this is all about laying the groundwork for green police. And that is what we're going to see them try to push. They want green police. So if you are in any way impinging on the quote unquote conservation of these lands, you become a criminal and you will have to pay not only monetary fines, but potentially other ramifications. So.
You know, it's horrifying. It's horrifying that they have already that there's this idea of creating some sort of a green SS stormtrooper operation to police people's productivity and make sure that they don't use the more than their allotted fertilizers as farmers or their allotted permission to whatever, right? To produce X amount according to your quota in order to keep your social credit score going. And there were blueprints of these things leaked in Canada, too, that freaked out a lot of farmers in Saskatchewan that called for setting up a green policing operation here to surveil farmers. There's something similar in France that would be tied to their law enforcement mechanisms already. It's much more advanced in France than it is here, but it's coming in both directions. And like you said, that's something that they're clearly pushing across the board. And most people who are good people, elected officials in the state level or local level, they just don't know. On the city councils, they need citizens to go and educate them. They're normal human beings. They're not in on the so-called agenda. They're not in on the joke, but they don't know. So what you did and what you've been demonstrating for citizens to really use as inspiration that we actually have more of a power than we realize to influence the thinking of policymakers is a very important thing. We're going to pull on this a little bit more when we come back from a short break on today's News Talk TNT.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
When it comes to the left-wing media, we all know by now they call Donald Trump every name in the book, and they don't cover his speeches very often because they say he lies.
Donald Trump lies about America's greatness. Donald Trump lies about America's men and women in uniform. Donald Trump lies about what small business owners and entrepreneurs and the geniuses of Silicon Valley and what the geniuses on Main Street USA, what they're all doing.
And so-called fact checkers have been living off of Donald Trump. But if anybody dares to fact check Joe Biden, well, watch.
It is ridiculous that the New York Times fact checked Joe Biden on something. I mean, he vomits lies. Trump vomits lies. And every day, over and over and over again. And it's just ridiculous that the New York Times is doing a fact check on Biden while they let Trump, while they're numb to the torrent of lies coming out of Trump's mouth.
That's former U.S. Senator Democrat Claire McCaskill. And that's what passes for our media right now. And it's not getting any better. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg. Catch my show Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on TNT.
I want to eat apples and bananas. I need to eat apples and bananas. Why can't I eat apples and bananas?
Support the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks to help provide meals to those in need. Join us at feedingamerica.org.
Navigating through the minefield of misinformation, intelligence operations, predictive programming. This is Connecting the Dots with Matt Arendt on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back for the third segment of the first hour, where I'm joined by Courtney Turner, podcast host, researcher. People could follow Courtney's work in the description box under this video, or go to Courtney Turner. Just Google it, Courtney, but spelt Courtney Turner. And you will definitely want to follow her work, Courtney. We were talking. There's a lot of points that were brought up regarding the common agenda. I was thinking about some, you know, the Mockingbird media. Sometimes the local news agencies think that they are telling the news. The local news reporters are thinking that they're just telling the news. They're getting a little like memo from Associated Press. But then, you know, you see these videos where somebody has done the job of just extracting all of the local TV channels reporting on a certain topic. And you're like, it's the same words. It's the same CIA stenographers talking about Russia this, China this, global warming this, whatever. And it's the same language, same words. So they don't know how they are actually more like automata, like machines that are programmed and less than human when they do things like this. They give up their humanity. And it's same thing for a lot of the legislative elected members of municipal and state level offices, even the federal level. I would say they're good people. They don't know how the game works. So it really helps that we're educating them, that you're educating them. Going through this, you already made a point. This is really important to emphasize. They were defeated in a sense. The battle was won, but not the war. They never give up. The SEC didn't allow for the plan to go ahead. There's too much resistance, too much awareness, but they're going to try it again. We already see they're not going to give up. This is a religion. It has all of the fervor of a crusade religion. So they're not going to give up. But how did this maybe, I both want to explore a little bit more what people can do, but also more importantly, also like, how is this tied to the thing that wasn't dealt with after World War II, this whole eugenics doctrine that a lot of people have only recently come to really explore in the last couple of years for obvious reasons. How did this get rebranded? Like how is this still eugenics? How did we not deal with this?
Yeah, it is definitely still eugenics. And I wonder if I have the list here. I have been going through the Illuminati documents because you know, I was reading Anthony Sutton's Order of Skull and Bones, and the whole like middle section of that book is how the Order took over education. And as I mentioned, that's the other issue I've been really fighting on. And they're all intertwined. This is all part of an agenda to make a, you know, it's a very Hegelian, which I don't think it originated with Hegel, but I think Hegel really codified this notion of the state is God, right? The state is this ultimate absolute. And so he actually thought that we have no freedom except through our subservience to the state, which, you know, there couldn't be anything more oxymoronic to me, but that is really what he believed, or at least what he put forth. And so, and of course, we're familiar with the Hegelian dialectic, and they really weaponized that. And I really saw it when I went to the Capitol, not when I spoke on the NACS, but when I went back for school choice, I had these individual meetings. And they have this mindset where it's, I keep saying that in Tennessee, I think it would behoove us to have a Democrat governor and a Republican legislator, because they're so locked into this framework of Democrats are bad, we're good. So, of course, if our Republican governor passes a bill, it's good because it came from the Republican, you know. And what I kept trying to stress to them was, I really don't care if it has an R or a D in front of it, if it is growing the government, stripping us of our personal sovereignty, limiting parental rights, land ownership rights, and increasing the tax budgets and tax expenditure, then I'm not for it. I really don't care if it has a D or an R in front of it. But they just don't get that. Their framework, their mindset is, they're bad, we're good. And I actually tried to explain to them the Hegelian dialectic, and they told me I was using big words that they don't know.
Oh, God.
So that was interesting. But I will just read this really quickly, because I've been reading. This is a very interesting book. It's by Dr. Emmanuel Mann Josephon. And he posits that the Communist Manifesto was essentially plagiarized from, and I've been saying this forever. He definitely really corroborates this theory that it was that Karl Marx essentially plagiarized from Adam Weishaupt and Clinton Roosevelt, who was related to our President Roosevelt. And Clinton Roosevelt wrote a book that was called The Science of Government, Founded on Natural Law. That was in 1841. And for those who are not familiar with the history, of course, you know, Adam Weishaupt formally founded the Illuminati in 1776. I believe it was May 1st, 1776. And then they got shut down. It was a secret society. The only reason we even know about it is because someone who was carrying the documents was killed, and then those documents were then released to the Bavarian government. This is very similar. The Order of Skull and Bones was leaked through, you know, documents that were found, but of course it was, you know, a secret society, and there was no, even the Russell Trust that was organized, that it was Gilman who was tasked with creating this Russell Trust. The Order of Skull and Bones was created by William Russell and Alfonso Taft. Alfonso Taft was related
to the opium,
President
opium, that was the opium smuggling agent, William Russell, right? Who like managed.
Yes. Yes.
the American components of that operation against China.
Yes. Yeah. But then the Illuminati did officially get shut down, and there were these offshoots. There was the League of the Outlaws, and then that became the League of the Just. I think of them as kind of the forerunners to today's modern social justice warriors. And that was, of course, helmed by Marx and Engels. Engels, interestingly enough, was a linguist. So he really understood the power of language and how it could be usurped, abused, and manipulated. And then he had the Communist League, and he led that. And he had these notes that were from Roosevelt's Communist Manifesto, what's called the Science of Government Founded on Natural Law. But so he, you know, then that was what was used to create the Communist Manifesto, which Marx's name initially wasn't even on it. They did a whole publicity campaign for him, commissioned him to write several articles and journals along those lines, and then they put his name on it. But all of this just to say that I think, you know, some of these, and I don't think it starts with Weishaupt, but some of these ideas really are, you know, what unify, and I would say they go back millennia. You know, I just want to preface that. I do think they go back millennia. But so it's to overthrow the existing governments and replace it by a dictatorship of the conspirators, looting individuals and nations of their wealth throughout such devices as violence and war, capital and income taxes, confiscatory inheritance taxes, and eventually an end to private ownership of property, except at the hands of the conspirators, who would own all the property and usurp the powers that such ownership would yield. Destruction of
this
all...
This is from this book.
It's obviously... it's from Roosevelt's Communist Manifesto, which is written by Dr. Emmanuel M. Josephson. And obviously, this is a translation with his bias. You can see that coming through. But I've seen very similar... lists that were in, was it Eustace Mullins, I think, a book on the New World Order. And then the other, of course, in the Proofs of a Conspiracy by John Robison. And he was an insider at that time. The book was published in 1798. And another book was the Code of the Illuminati, which was also published that same year. And interestingly enough, Proofs of a Conspiracy was used by George Washington to warn the American public of the infiltration of the Illuminati in the French Revolution and the Masonry. And the Code of Illuminati was used by Jefferson to warn the American public. Unfortunately, we did not heed that warning very well. Or I don't think people have learned from it today. So property except at the hands of the conspirators, who would then own all property and usurp the power that such ownership would yield. Destruction of all religions, supplanting them with doctrines laid down by their conspirators. Destruction of the family and supplanting its discipline by that of the dictators. Internationalism that was required by the conspirators' scheme for control over one world, involving the outlawing of patriotism and fostering of treason. So I read that again. Obviously, that is his, you know, translation and interpretation. But I think that that's kind. Those are the, you know, tenets that kind of unify all of these agendas. It's this idea that we, of course, cannot, because if we, I think it was Margaret Breitfeld, and I'm not sure she came up with this, but, you know, it's either we own property or we become the property that is owned. And that's why they want to strip up of any. And I think they did that initially with the property taxes. So it's very interesting when our founding father, you know, started the United States, they felt that property taxes were very, very important. But it was very different back then because it was essentially more like a co-op. The people who paid property taxes, only property owners could vote back then. And so it was kind of like if you think of a co-op building, you know, you are on a board when you buy your apartment. And so you, you're buying into this corporation, essentially. And that's how it was back then. Yeah.
I didn't know this. Are you talking about after the revolution, only property owners? No, not before the revolution, only
before
property owners
revolution.
Could vote.
Only
yeah,
property
on the state
vote.
Level or on the yeah. colonial level.
Colonial level.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that was the purpose of property taxes back then, because that, of course, that was a way of funding the government. Now, though, you know, that's not true. Everybody can vote in the United States. And I essentially see property taxes as a way that the government really leases your land to you. You don't really own it. What happens if you default on your property taxes? And, you know, my theory is that when they're done pushing everybody into the city and bringing them to their knees because they can't, they even in their own documents, they said that this conservation of the land is a tantamount. It's paramount, even over, you know, human flourishing, which essentially means that, you know, it's too bad if we can't provide energy or resources or food for human, we have to preserve the land. That's way more important. That takes precedence. And so I think, you know, when they bring people to their knees, you know, and of course, this is just my opinion, but when they bring people to their knees and they push them all into these, you know, surveillance grids where they, you know, they can geofence them into these 15-minute cities under this social credit, digital currency, neo-feudal system, then the remaining lands, they will be able to, you know, push everybody back, you know, either into the cities or have complete control over them into these forced labor camps type of situation. I think they'll also, people who do remain ownership of land, they're going to raise the taxes so high that people default and then they will seize all of that land too. And that's actually one of the things they did to decimate the Roman Empire. Why wouldn't they use the same playbook?
That's what they did to decimate the Roman Empire?
Yeah. They,
go on.
They raised the taxes.
So a lot. I didn't plan on you just having that bombshell you just threw out. So how do you? Yeah, go on. Could you expand on that a little bit in the next? Two
yeah,
minutes?
They outpriced the taxes. They raised the taxes on the land so that they seized all the ownership of the land, and then the people were forced to seize them. They had control.
Oh, the free farmers, of course, right? This is something I had in the back of my mind. It wasn't. I didn't associate it with what's going on now. But
modern,
it's true. They had the free
right,
farmers.
I know, but it's why wouldn't they use the same playbook? Isn't it the same people?
Yeah, no,
their
makes
children?
Sense. Of course. Of course. Yeah. Then you had the indentured servants structure, right? And then yeah, right. And then you become like the. It's not too many steps before you get into the Diocletian reforms, where all of a sudden it becomes a law that whatever your father and mother did, you and your kids thus have to do to maintain control. So that's not too many steps away from that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. No. I try not
to bring all of that in when I spoke to the Senate because I realized I already went too far beyond what they were, you know, processing. So yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I think.
Go on. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think these ideas, you know, it's definitely this Malthusian philosophy. You brought up like UNESCO and you brought up Julian Huxley. And, you know, they're just carrying out this same kind of worldview, this same Malthusian philosophy. And of course, UNESCO is also, I just think it's interesting that these two issues that I've seem to have become very active in, they're not unrelated. They seem very unrelated, but they're absolutely related. And it's because if you have a smaller population, it's much easier to control them. And I think their goal is to put us into a transhuman leading to posthuman. Yes, posthumanism is a philosophy. They actually have several handbooks on it. It's called the Handbook on Posthumanism. I thought there was only one, but there's multiple. And it is the idea of just what it sounds like, this posthuman world. But I think they want to, you know, put us in a transhuman leading to posthuman world that is controlled by an AI hyborg mind that they program. And somehow they think they will be immortal, and they will have control over everybody. But it's much easier to have control over a small, limited group of people that can be their serfs in their neo-feudal technocratic world than it is to have 8 billion people who could potentially have independent critical thought and not be so happy with being serfs in their neo-feudal
system. Yeah, no, that's a good point, because like a lot of these creatures with their ivory tower, cold, calculated ideas that they've gamed in their computer models, they've generated their scenarios according to whatever computer models they're using, have generated outcomes that they think that they then guide their own planning for this whole new world order dystopia. They're using data sets that derive from like MK Ultra controlled environments in prisons, in hospitals, in schools, but very controlled micro examples as their hard data that they then feed into the thing. And it's like, that is not a sample of anything honest about what humans are. That's just you very artificially abused people that you're thinking that you could extrapolate to 8 billion, and it never works. We got 30 seconds left, Courtney.
Okay.
Where can people go to find you, to follow your work?
CourtneyTurner.com, and again, it's spelled like Courtney, so it is pronounced Courtney, but it's spelled like Courtney, CourtneyTurner.com, and you can find all of my podcast platforms there, all my articles, all of my social media.
Thank you, Courtney. All right. Awesome. Thank you so much.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.